heaven?
No. It's Iowa.
Bubby. Eric. McLean. Been telling Ben's Gruber that you and I are really good friends. Go way back. Buddy, don't leave me hanging.
Hey, Ben, Kevin, come out to the coast, get on the podcast, have a few laughs.
Kevin, tell him you're not friends with me. Tell him. You don't know who you're dealing with, Kevin. Just tell him you don't know me.
Buddy, listen to me. Ben's Gruber wants you to chill out. We'll all have a few laughs. Come on down.
Hey, Johnny boy.
You just let him die. That's the same as pulling the trigger, man.
Here, we're talking Die Hard in the Pot of Dreams.
It's Christmas Eve in L.A.
California.
Is Daddy coming home, Sue?
Well, we'll see what Santa and Mommy can do, okay?
A New York cop, John McLean, has come to see his wife.
I missed you.
Instead, he's going to have to save her.
Sit down.
Within this skyscraper high above the city, 12 terrorists have declared war.
They're about to be taught a lesson in the real use of power.
They're as brilliant.
Because I am interested in the $640 million in your vault.
As they are ruthless.
But I'm telling you, you're just going to have to kill me.
Okay. We do it the hard way.
Now, the last thing McLean wants.
Think, damn it, think.
Is to be a hero.
Where's Howie?
Hey, Tucker!
Where?
But he doesn't have a choice.
What does he think he's doing?
Job.
They have already killed one hostage.
This channel is reserved for emergency calls only.
Lady, do I sound like I'm one of the pieces?
He's inside? Who is he? Who are you then? You are most troublesome for a security guard.
Sorry, wrong guess, huh? Would you like to go for double jeopardy?
Do anything you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy.
Yippee-ki-yay, mother.
You just destroyed a building.
And I am in charge of this situation.
Well, I got some bad news for you. From up here, that looks like you're in charge of Jack.
He is alone, he is tired, and he hasn't seen Disney Squad from anybody down here.
Hey, pal, how you feeling?
No thing being equal, I'd rather be in Philadelphia.
I want blood and you have it.
Only John can drive somebody that crazy.
He's an easy guy to like.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
And a hard man to kill. Bruce Willis. Die Hard.
Got invited to the Christmas party by mistake. Who knew?
This episode is brought to you by the good people at the Synthetic Food Council for lab-grown meat. We are pleased to meet you. Delicious cruelty-free meat available in three varieties. Chicken, beef, and human. Yes, that's right. Ethically sourced human meat for even the most discerning cannibal. Don't take my word for it. Just ask celebrity endorser Armie Hammer. Available at finer grocery stores near you. Except in Florida. All right, so this week we're talking Die Hard.
So you can't get it in Florida? Is that... You can't get the meat in Florida? Did I hear that right?
Oh, you can get meat in Florida, baby.
You can't You can't get lab-grown meat.
Lab-grown human meat.
Lab-grown meat at all in Florida.
Oh, okay. Oh. Human or not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. Hey, we're talking Die Hard.
I mean, does it matter? It's just meat.
No. Meat's meat.
Meat's meat.
I love the Armie Hammer bit. That's like, 5 years old, but still plays.
Well, are there that many celebrity cannibals that you can name?
There aren't. There really aren't. That's a really short list.
Hey, there's a market. There's space.
Okay. What are we doing here?
I was waiting for Kevin to take the reins. I'm waiting for Kevin to just grab this thing by the balls and start steering it. But
welcome to the party, pal.
Ho ho ho. Now I have a machine gun.
So funny story about that. I was at a bar a few years ago and I was telling my wife about that line in the movie, and I said it as I thought it was in the movie, and now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho. And this guy who was sitting at the bar near us is like, that's not the line. He said, it's ho, 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 now I have a machine gun. And it, like, interrupted us. I'm like, the fuck? Like, okay, guy. And it isn't. It's now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho. That's the line. You said it wrong.
So the ho, ho, ho comes second.
It's after, yeah. Because that he says it slow. Hans is like, ho, ho, ho at the end. I'm just saying.
Sorry, some douchey Minnesotan corrected you.
I got sounds like a typical Minnesotan to me. That same line. That's anyways, fine. Kevin, kick us off. We're talking Die Hard.
We're talking Die Hard. This is a movie that I watched a lot as a kid, and I was just in love with David Addison, Bruce Willis, on Moonlighting, and I thought he was the coolest guy to ever live, and I wanted to be just like him, and this movie cemented that.
You wanted his hairline?
I did, even as a kid. He had such cool hair. What a stud. So it's been a long time since I watched this movie, so I was happy to get to see it again this weekend.
So it's 1988. What is 1988, Kevin? Is he at the theater seeing movies? What's going on in 1988?
Sneaking into a rated R movie, sir?
Yeah.
No, this one I had to have watched on VHS. The
what's
old
that?
VCR.
Yeah, so
what was your rental? What was the rental store you went to when you were 13? Was it a Blockbuster?
No, we didn't have Blockbuster where I lived. I lived in a town in North Dakota called Minot. We okay. didn't have chain video stores. We had
is
video
that in America? Is that that's
it's
in
actually
Canada,
a Canadian right? territory, actually.
Yeah. I mean, oh, no, wait, I wish it was. For some reason, we have two senators, just like California and Texas and New York. So we're just as important for no reason at all. If South Dakota and North Dakota became one state, the world might be a better place, actually.
I do remember my parents going to see Die Hard 2 and wanting to go with and them not letting me because it was rated R.
What buzzkills.
I don't remember. I mean, I would have been 6-ish when this movie was released. So I don't have any memory of it like coming out in the theater. But I do sure. remember when Die Hard 2 came out.
I think I did watch Die Hard 2 in the theater and it was so boring. I just remember
it's not
it being
good.
I just
it's
being
totally
very
forgettable. It's like a movie I watch and I think, oh, it's kind of okay as I'm watching it, and then I instantly forget. Almost everything happens other than the ejector seat in the plane and the villain doing naked Tai Chi at the very beginning of the movie. Those are like the only two scenes I can ever remember. It's bad. It's not a good movie. It's the exception to the like middle movie in the trilogy being the best one. It is not the best one by far. It's just not good. So Die Hard with a Vengeance, is that 95? Somebody correct me on the year.
1995, yes. I definitely saw that in the movie theater.
That's shameful. Another you were not McTiernan. Old enough, sir.
That's correct. That was one of those I think we had to like buy a ticket to a different movie and then go
and
to that
in.
One.
Oh, yeah. That was a classic approach.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I got kicked out of Doors for doing that.
Really?
The movie Doors?
Yeah.
With Oliver Doors. Stone?
Okay. Oliver Stone.
They used to be so hardcore about that at movie theaters. They would take their like responsibility with not letting kids see rated. Have you ever seen anyone check anyone's ticket in the last 20 years?
I didn't have that when I was at my theater at all.
Oh,
it
really?
Wasn't okay. Hill, Iowa. It was never an issue. Nobody
it was
cared.
A huge issue where I grew up. But
it was,
now
it was all teenagers working and they did not give a shit. They were not going to bust you. They were whatever.
It was like they'd lose their theater license or something. They were
right.
so
it was
hard.
Like selling liquor to an underage kid. It was like hardcore. Yeah, that's how it was for me too.
Well, you were like 6'4" when you were like 13, so it was probably pretty easy.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, I remember sometimes that like my parents would drop me off and we wouldn't get into the movie, and then we'd have to just like wander around for 2 hours because I didn't have couldn't call my parents back. Like, hey, they wouldn't let us into the movie. Yeah.
See, this wasn't one attached to the Mall of America or wherever. This was just like a freestanding theater. So you just said
Harmar Mall.
Yeah.
Okay.
But there's not really nothing in Harmar, or there wasn't back then. Like a Foot Locker and a.
Yeah, there's
Marshalls or whatever.
There's like a Barnes and Noble now or something.
Yeah, that wasn't there when I was a kid.
I'm sure about a 13-year-old ruffian Eric wandering around annoyed he couldn't see his movie, just tried to kill two.
Well, it's like an arcade. There was like you play the, you spend the $6 you have on the arcade, and then
and that lasts you 20 minutes.
Right, and then there's like, what else? I don't have any more money. I can't call anyone. Like, I'm just stuck here.
Just stuck.
Oh man, that's funny. Okay. Well, I also saw Die Hard on VHS. I was 4. I didn't know what Die Hard was when I was 4.
I still don't know what a Die Hard is. What is a Die Hard?
The franchise or
the title? What
does it mean to be very difficult to die, to be good at not dying?
Is it a noun? Like to be Die Hard? Or is
do
it
you
like
die hard?
You die hard? It's a verb. Okay.
It's a verb. Yes.
Okay, so McClane is—he's a diehard.
Dude, he dies hard. He's hard to die.
But he doesn't die.
I know, because he's so good at not dying. That's how hard he dies. Hey, it's goofy, but it works for whatever reason. Yeah, it doesn't actually make a ton of sense grammatically when you think about it. And then when it gets like, what the sequels is Die Hard 2, Die Harder. Isn't that the subtitle?
I think so. Yeah.
That's so dope.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Die Hard with a Vengeance is pretty sweet, though.
It's great. That's an absolutely sick title for. Yeah. No, it's just Die Hard 2. I think it's just Die Hard 2.
I've seen that subtitle somewhere, but that's okay. Maybe somebody made it up. I don't know.
Wikipedia says Die Hard 2. And then Die Hard with a Vengeance, Live Free and Die Hard, and A Good Day to Die Hard. So that's that. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week.
Yeah, I don't know why we're waiting so long to get into it.
Kevin, you remember it as a kid, wanted to rewatch it. Any just particular reason other than you just wanted to check it out again? Or
yeah, I purchased it for streaming a long time ago and hadn't watched it, so I needed a good excuse, and this was as good as any. I was itching to watch it.
See, I watch it just about every Christmas.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
To me, this is like a Home Alone and then Die Hard. Those are like my Christmas movies. So I watch it very often, probably once a year. I'll have it on at some point. I don't know if I like watch it. Like, you know, I'll pop in. There's, you know, Gruber when he first comes on the screen. The Takagi interrogation is always a great. I always love that scene.
I enjoyed Argyle.
Argyle's great. You're very fast, Argyle. Like I said, you're very fast. Don't you have any Christmas music? Man, this is Christmas music. Yeah, Argyle's great.
Well, see, Dwayne T. Robinson, the LAPD deputy chief, is one of the... You always like doing the ranking thing here. He's one of the all-time great, just aggressively wrong, like incorrect characters. Almost everything he says is just egregiously off-kilter.
Well, all the cops are kind of dumb, except for Family Matters guy.
Yeah, Carl Winslow and Bruce Willis, yep.
No, Reginald...
Val Johnson? Yeah.
Val Johnson.
No, Winslow is his name on... Family Matters. That's the character's name. That's Carl Winslow.
It should be. I mean, he's just the same character on that show as he is on this one.
He's literally a cop in Family Matters. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
That is just a.
So does he like Twinkies?
The Die Hard universe.
Sure.
It wasn't for him. They were for his pregnant wife.
Sure. Sure, they were.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, pal.
But early instance of police brutality.
You know? Well, he was ashamed to have shot an unarmed kid. Like, that was a source of embarrassment and shame.
I love the way he describes that. Like, it was dark. The ray gun looked real enough. Like, this movie's all-time great for me. Like, all-time great. This is my first just big picture thought. I think this is the best written action movie ever. Like, the way... And I don't know if it's specifically the writing, but the way it's structured in that, like, the things you see and learn at the pace you see and learn them is like unmatched, I think, other than Predator. And so maybe it is a directing. Maybe it is just as simple as John McTiernan was like fucking one of the best ever to do action movies.
Well, it's no coincidence that the two best Die Hard movies are directed by him. Second one, fourth one, fifth one, not. I mean, it just, yeah. I mean, everything you just said is totally correct. I'm blown away by just how tight the script is and how absolutely well written it is. And yes, how it's shot. So there's a scene, I don't know, anybody listening to this has probably seen Die Hard. So I don't know the extent that the plot needs to be talked about in any particular detail is relevant. But
it's explain bearer bonds to the listeners, if you
that would. That's just the thing they want. I don't care.
So
that has nothing to do with the plot.
Bearer bonds are totally anonymous. You take, they're full of stamps. You take one of the stamps, you mail it in, and you get money back
from the bank. Who gives you the money?
The bondholder, whoever has taken out.
So was it like Takagi Industries, like their bonds? So you would just mail it into the company, and then the company would just give. Is it like stock?
Well, I think they bought it, so they owned them.
Yeah, they own the bonds. So you just mail them, anybody can just mail them that stamp and get money. So it's totally anonymous. So that's
the early cryptocurrency. There we go.
Yeah, so that's why if you steal it, you can...
It's a non-fungible token, right?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. I never knew what a bearer bond was.
That just makes the script even better. It makes sense with it. That's why they want it. They have a pretty good plan in place.
So it's just like cash, but it's untraceable now.
Well, wouldn't they trace where the money goes when you send it in to get the cash, to actually get cash for it?
I assume they go to some place with no extradition to the U.S. or whatever.
Like Switzerland or something?
Sure. Or some, he said beach, so I assume some tropical place.
Getting 20%. Sitting on a beach, collecting 20%. One of my favorite lines in the history of movies.
So yeah, somewhere where they, you know, like even if they figure out who it is, they're required to give them the buy. Yeah, I mean, they can't prove it's them objectively, and so they've got to give them money. I don't know. But again, none of this is super important. I mean, what is just going to emphasize your point early on, right when the, you know, Hans Gruber and company show up to the party at Nakatomi Plaza. Bruce Willis is in an office. He's got the gun and he sees the terrorists coming in and checking all the offices in the back. And he's looking, and you see him look, right? We get his view. It looks down the hallway. We see him looking at the terrorists coming this way. Then we see the camera pan to the exit. It doesn't tell us what's going on, but it's just implicit. He's got to decide. Like, he's got to figure out, can he get to the exit? Those guys are going to see him if he runs. But then they go to the office where the couple are fucking, and then so he makes a bolt for the exit and leaps. And the movie does such a good job of ramping up the action slowly. His first instinct for pretty much the first half of the movie is trying to get help. He's not trying to fight anybody. He's trying to avoid conflict and get other people there because he's got a handgun. They've all got machine guns and he can't just barge in. It won't work. He's got to be smart and he's got to try to do it. Every problem he has is a result of him trying to get help. He sets the fire alarm. A guy comes after him, tries to bust open the window. A guy comes after him, tries to call on the, you know, walkie on the top of the building. They find him on the top of the roof. Every one of those is what causes the bad guys to be able to come find him and creates all the problems. And then it escalates from there. It just escalates so well and slowly. And he just makes so many smart decisions. And then that's also matched by Hans Gruber, Alan Rickman, again, a great villain, also being very smart. So you have this really compelling chess match that happens all throughout the movie. And it's super fun to watch. Anyway, yes, it's super well written is the bottom line. And his character Bruce Willis's character, John McClane, is really great. It's really well constructed. I mean, one of the things I was blown away is, like, he does all this insanely macho shit in this movie. Steps on the glass, does all these crazy jumps, kills a bunch of dudes. But he realizes that he's been a dick to his wife. Even though he does all this awesome stuff, like his wife's kicking ass in his career, he's not being supportive. He should move out to LA. He's being a douche. And he's a dick at the beginning of the movie. He's a total dick to Holly when he sees her at the party. It's great. Anyway.
They show him checking out a couple of ladies, too, as they're walking by.
Oh, yeah. And there's the calendar. He, like, stops. Well, even though he's in the stressful situation, there's a nudie calendar, and he stops, and he turns and looks at it.
Hey, girls.
See, this even starting further back in the movie, like, when he gets off the plane, he has this, like, interaction with the flight attendant where she's, like, kind of checking at him, and he smiles back, and it's like, oh, there's a little heat between these two. And, like, so much of the character of John McClane is built in the first, like, 5-10 minutes of the movie, when he lands in the plane and, you know, the guy next to him tells him about the balls with his feet, and he sees the gun on his jacket, and he's like, trust me, I've been doing this for 12 years or whatever. It's like, you learn so much of his character. That's why I said about the writing, because, like, we don't see Hans Gruber. We don't know that there's this invasion or attack or anything until, I don't know, 25 minutes into the movie. It's all just building who this John McClane guy is. And it's just a family drama, really, at that point. He's, like you said, he's coming out to L.A. to see his wife. And there's this, you know, the Holly Gennaro stuff where he's scrolling through and he doesn't see McClane. And he's like, fuck, she's using her maiden name, and goes to Gennaro. Like, you can see how angry he is about that. Like, and then it comes back when they have their fight. I don't know.
Then it comes back again. She uses Gennaro to confuse the terrorist. And then it comes back at the very end as well. I mean, no.
It's one of my favorite bits is where he's saying, oh, it's my first day as a limo driver. And then he says, well, it's my first time riding a limo. And then it cuts to him riding in the front of the limo. Yeah. Like a.
I didn't know you were going to sit up front. It's a girl's day off or whatever. He's like, he's got trash and garbage in the front seat. Yeah. Well, and that's just like, that's who John McClane is. He's a New York cop. Never been in a fucking limo before. Doesn't know what's going on out here in LA.
Yeah. Doesn't want to sit in the back.
And he says California several times. And he's clearly not into the vibes. He gets kissed by some dude or the party.
Fucking California. Yeah.
Yep. Can't deal with it. No, it does a great job of building up. And the family tension before it ratchets up the action.
It's what modern movies miss so much. Like, they try, especially, you know, modern action movies, try to, like, there's got to be some explosion or fight scene within 2 minutes. It's like, let's get to learn who these people are a little bit before we get, boring. So we care at all about what happens. Well, I disagree.
I disagree with my bit also. Wasn't being serious. No, this works. It spends some time setting up the characters, and even Takashi, whatever his name is. You know, we don't see that many scenes with him, but he seems okay. He says something nice about Holly, and even then, when he's shot, it's way more impactful. We see him get killed.
Yeah,
early on in the first act.
Hans Gruber says how many kids he has and his life story. He was interred in California.
I had so many questions about. I actually rewound it watching this. He goes through his, like, career. He gets, like, he graduates from college in, like, 71 or something like that. And he's like Stanford Law School in, like, 79. Is like, what did Takagi do for, like, 4 years between law school and in his MBA? I was like, that's weird. And then his family was interned when he was a kid. I was like, man, what a crazy story this Takagi guy has. Like, we need a prequel on his life. But if there's so much built into that, like, and a guy, he just dies and then never really heard from again, that no reason for there to be that much information or background about him, but it adds so much to it.
It does. And John McClane seems like a real person. You know, he's there, he sees the shooting happen, and he's like mad at himself, but he's got to like think logically. He's like, why didn't you do anything, John? Well, you'd be dead just like him. You'd both be dead. Like, he's got to make these difficult choices. So he has to just let it happen because he just can't. He could have potentially shot Hans, but then he would have been killed by everybody else. And it's like, he just has to think through logically and be smart. And it's great. It takes its time. It's amazing how little out and out action there is for quite a while. And even then, it's just really quick, a little burst, right? He wrestles the guy. There's rules for policemen, that guy. And then, you know, then there's a little pause, and then like the game becomes afoot. And then he's got
to kill. Had to kill the only terrorist with shoes smaller than my sister.
Yeah. But he does all, and he has an incredible MacGyver set. I will say this. He's got an outlandish skill set for being able to like do handyman stuff. Like when he Jerry rigs the elevator, I mean, it's smart, right? He wants to try to get intel. I'm like, I would have no idea how to do that. And I suspect probably most New York cops wouldn't know how to do all that stuff. Yeah, but
has he done that before?
Like, yeah, it's like
the first time.
No,
he had the axe. He knew exactly to prop it open. He knew to climb up and hit the button and then jump up there. And like, he knew it was going to go up to the top of the elevator shaft. And then, yeah, like, how did he know any of that was going to happen? I suppose the idea is he doesn't. He's just sort of playing it like, you know, like,
yeah, he doesn't know that the one's going to stop. Yeah. He thinks he might get smushed for a second. You see a look on his face like, oh, I didn't quite think this 100% through. I might get smushed. And then he doesn't. And okay, we get to move on.
But that's the difference between McClane or Bruce Willis and like Schwarzenegger. If this was like a Schwarzenegger movie, he would just start chopping skulls up right away and just beefing his way through it. It only works because, like you said, the first thing we see with him is he runs away, right? Yeah. He doesn't start fighting. He's got a gun. Like, if this was a Seagal movie, he would just start fighting everybody. Instead, we see him run away.
If it's Seagal, yes, he would just be perfect at everything and kick everybody's ass, and everybody would say, this guy is so cool and awesome. Step of the way.
Interesting because, you know, McTiernan, he worked with Schwarzenegger before in Predator. He actually wanted Schwarzenegger for this role.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, that would be quite a different movie.
It would. Yeah, I mean...
Was it, like, too expensive, or do you know, you have any more information on why?
Oh, just that Schwarzenegger turned it down.
He'd already done Commando, I guess. Didn't want to do this. Yeah, because if you contrast this to, like, Commando, I mean, that movie is just so stupid. I mean, it's fun, but it's so ridiculous. It's literally just him standing there mowing people down with guns with zero concern about getting shot back because, you know, he's the superhero of the movie. No, it's very, very smart, and it never gets super ridiculous. There's a couple times where it gets borderline silly. Like, a couple of explosions are a little bit okay, but even the way it tracks what items he has and the guns, like, he gets that machine gun. I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho. Like, even that, he loses that machine gun, and it's very careful about people having to reload, and it seems to take, like, the gun play very, very seriously. I mean, some gun nut could say if there was some mistake, but everything looks very real and impactful. All the shots, and then when they run out of ammo, where he loses the gun, he loses the gun. He doesn't have it anymore. Side note, one plot question. When he drops the plastic explosives down the shaft, does he just calculate the explosion will be on the same floor as the guys with the big guns? How does he get the explosion to happen at the exact right spot he wants it to? You know what I'm talking about?
Like, oh, I thought the explosion was, I thought it hit the ground floor. Yes. That's what I thought.
Oh, I thought
he drops it all the way down to the bottom floor of the elevator shaft.
Then who are the guys that he kills? Because I thought he didn't kill the guys on the ground floor. Because there's like the Huey Lewis dude and the guy that eats the Crunch right. Bar.
Not and the Huey Mars Lewis.
Bar. Yeah, the guy that looks like Huey Lewis.
You're right. That is, I guess I never tracked that when he drops it down.
Because I don't think it is the first floor. Because those guys survive, and they're towards the very end of the movie. And those are the guys on the first floor. That have the like artillery right. That are blowing up the.
Does that
RV.
In response to them shooting the rockets at the?
Yeah, he's like, you made your point, Hans. Yeah. You made your point, and they don't. And then he's like, all right, and he figures out where they are, and somehow gets the explosion to take those two guys out.
But I thought when Dwayne T. Robinson. When they're outside, we see the explosion come out from the bottom of the building. And that's where he's like, glass, who gives a shit about glass?
Well, you know, so I mean, the explosion hits the bottom floor, but the big, if you look at, I think if you were to rewatch that scene, it looks like the actual base of the explosion is at a higher level where like you just see the flames erupt. So the explosion impacts the ground floor, it impacts above it as well, you know. The flames come up and he looks down. He's
maybe,
like, oh, shit.
Maybe that's where the elevator was. It was stopped at that floor and then.
Oh, that's there. I bet that's exactly what it is. Okay. See, you just answered the question. So, yeah, it wasn't on the ground floor, but he knew where the elevator was stopped because the guys had got off of it. See, the smart right. movie to where they could shoot the RV. So it hit there and then exploded. There we go.
Because I think he sees it ding where the floor that it stopped at. And then that's when he looks up.
That's exactly it. No, that's 100% right. So There you go. That makes sense. That's super logical. And he has a scene where he like hears it and he thinks it through, and then he looks down the elevator shaft and that's where he drops it. So that's exactly what it is. Like, okay, the elevator's on the floor. I don't know exactly what floor it is, but that floor, this will hit the explosion and explode on that floor and kill those two dudes. That's 100% what it is. Got it. See? Even smarter. Like, see, just the one question I just proves even
airtight, baby.
It is airtight. It really is. Anyway, but he does this kind of stuff all the time, and he looks rightfully fucked up by the end of the movie too. A lot of times action heroes just get like a elegant smear of blood on their face or a scar on their forehead, and he just like he looked completely wrecked by the, like, that dude's going to have a limp for the rest of his life, and that's what it looks like. Like, he's not going to recover fully from everything that happened. He just looks so messed up by the other movie. I mean, it just makes him seem like a real person. That's part of what this works and why some of the sequels struggle, because he doesn't seem like a real person some of the time.
There's like helicopter crashes and crazy stuff in the later ones where he survives.
Although Die Hard with a Vengeance is very similar. I mean, he gets fucked up at the end of that movie and beat up, and he's got oil all over him and stuff. And
yeah, I need to rewatch that one. It's been a long time since I've seen it. Seeing this again made me want to rewatch that one, and I don't care about any of the other ones. The other ones are not.
Yeah, I mean, it must just be a McTiernan thing where he knows exactly how the movie should be paced. Because I think Die Hard with Vengeance is equally. I mean, yeah. I don't think it's as perfect as this movie, but it's close. It's up there for me.
Yeah, if somebody says with a Vengeance their favorite or it's the best, that's totally fine. Like
the Sam Jackson of it all. I think, you know, there's not a character like that in this movie.
No, but there's a reason for that sequel to exist. Like, there's Die Hard 2. They're like, we're going to do the same thing, but in an airport. Okay. You know, I didn't even hardly remember the plot of 4 and 5. They were just forgettable nonsense.
But some, like, hacker stuff.
Yeah, with Justin Long. Yeah. And then the fifth one there in Russia.
I actually like that movie. It's
mid, as Kevin described Draft Day last week. I mean, it's just mid. It's just a run-of-the-mill action movie. Nobody would have cared about it at all if it didn't have Die Hard in the name. It didn't have to have Die Hard in the name.
I don't think it was even originally written as a Die Hard movie.
I know that for a fact. The third one wasn't. It was like Simon Says or something like that, and then they were just like, let's just add John McClane in it and call it Die Hard.
And let's make Simon his brother. And
right,
sure, okay. It all makes sense. It all makes sense why it's happening to John McClane. There's a scene in 2 where I think, you know, Bonnie Bedelia, Holly is like, why does this keep happening to us? He's like, well, you just needed to be a sequel. But the next one with a Vengeance makes tons of sense. I would say 1 and 3, take your pick. I'd pick 1, but they're both great. And then after that, it really falls way down. Yeah, so 4 is probably the best of the other ones. It's okay. But it is not great.
Yeah, you know,
it vanished from existence. I wouldn't care.
You got to look at McTiernan's oeuvre. I mean, Predator, and then he goes from Predator to make Die Hard right away.
Like the next year, yeah.
And that's what a run. And then it's Hunt for Red October.
Sure, very good.
Another awesome movie.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's
Last Action Hero. Are you guys fans of that
film? I love Last Action Hero.
I love that movie great. So much when I was a kid. Oh my god, I really fucking love it. I have not seen it since I was a kid, and I've since, you know, listened to some podcasts about it, how it's like just a complete parody of that stuff. Oh, yeah. And
sure,
I didn't get that when I was a kid, you know.
It's a smart movie.
Yeah, and somebody who gets the genre could really break it apart in a really fun way, and I think he did. But yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time. I think I'd like it even more as an adult, probably, than as a kid.
Have either of you guys seen his first movie, Nomads, with Pierce Brosnan?
Oh, I hear it's really bad, though.
That's what I've heard, too.
But for some reason, after watching that, Schwarzenegger wanted him to do Predator with him.
And I mean, we haven't done Predator yet in this podcast, but that is like one of my all time favorite movies. I mean, I think that movie, I mean, it's a 5-star, just like, well, you know, blow the lead here, but 5-star, just like this movie. but in a totally different way. It's a perfect movie.
Yeah.
It's a masterpiece.
Say, pick that sometime. I don't think I've ever seen Predator all the way through. I've seen a bunch of the scenes. It's one movie that would be like on cable and I'd see bits of it, but.
That blows my mind.
I don't think I ever just like here at the beginning.
It's a fucking perfect movie.
Okay. I mean, I don't need to be convinced. I just need
get to the chopper.
Yeah, I mean, again, yeah, know that it's line. If it
real nasty habit you got there.
Sexual tyrannosaur line.
Yeah, that'll make you a goddamn sexual tyrannosaur. Former governor Jesse Ventura.
Sure.
But yeah.
Can we talk about the humor in this movie too? It's like,
yeah,
this movie is genuine. I genuinely so.
Oh, we're talking about Ellis.
So there's Ellis, right? The cokehead. And the first, I mean, I saw this movie when I was a kid, probably like in 95, 90s, probably right after Die Hard with Vengeance came out to VHS. So probably 96 ish. I was 12 and I saw Die Hard and then like watched the trilogy at the time. That's all it was. I didn't get all the coke stuff is the bottom line. But, it's like, but
I love that scene where John finally gets to the Holly's office and they go in there and Ellis is in there doing coke, right? He's doing blow and he's like, oh, he's using Holly's phone. And Takagi's there too. And he's like, this is John McClane, Holly's husband, the policeman. And he's like, oh, and Ellis is like, oh shit. But then Ellis kind of starts poking back at McClane, like, cause he obviously knows that Holly moved out there and John didn't come with. Ellis knows the whole story.
Oh yeah, right? He was asking her out.
He's trying to fuck her, right?
Yes.
He's trying to fuck her the whole time. And so there's this like back and forth between McClane and Ellis that like I just love it, man. I just love it. It's so good. And he's about to show him the watch. It's a Rolex. Like such a fucking dick.
And he's like, so cooked out he can't wait. Like he's gotta say it's a Rolex, because he literally can't even just wait to see. He's like, it's Rolex. Blah. Just a small token of our appreciation.
But then like that feeds into why partly you could see why McClane, when he finally, you know, talks to her about she didn't use her maiden name, he's starting to get a little like, I'm sure, insecure about the whole thing that his wife's there. She's using her maiden name. This guy obviously wants to fuck her. Like it fuels why he would be so pissed about all of that. You know, it's like it's totally relatable and understandable and like doesn't even need to be in this movie because 30 seconds later, it's just guns shooting and he's killing terrorists or whatever. But it's just those little details, I think, that just make this movie so perfect.
Right. But even then, he's still mean. Like, because you see there that little interpersonal drama. Holly's being sweet. She's like, why don't you stay with us?
Oh, yeah.
But, like, the kids would love to see you. And he's like, the kids. He's wanting her to kiss his ass, right? And she says,
you'd be driving half the time. Pomona.
I would miss you. I miss you. I want you to be there. And then he's just, rather than say, I love you, I miss you too, reciprocating, he's like, I notice you're not using my last name.
Or when you're signing checks.
And then he's just a total ass. Like, yeah, okay, you've got some valid emotional concerns, but you're not engaging at all. You're just coming in with full douche energy straight off the bat. Like, she's being genuinely sweet. You look at it, she's like, she's being kind. They've had 6 months of tension, and she says she wants to see him and stay. And instead of like rolling with it or having a conversation, he's just immediately an asshole.
I found that very relatable.
Yeah, me too. That is like, fuck, dude. I've said things where it's like, slam my head against the wall, you big dummy. Well, like, why didn't you?
Right.
Yeah. Obviously, she's trying to be nice, and you're not hearing it, and you say something that you shouldn't have said. I have been there.
Yes. Sure, but it's interesting because like he's this macho guy, but it's clear that he's the wrong person. Like he's the one making the misstep, at least in that conversation. It's great. And I just love back to Ellis. I love you can see him slowly build up his coke confidence, right? He's pacing. It's like, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. Then at some point, he's like, fuck it. And he's just going to try to deal with the situation himself. You can see.
Speaking to talk.
Yeah, he doesn't even say Deutsch. He says talk. I mean, everything he says is just coke douche. And he gets in there. These guys want something. Am I right? Am I right? And he's just so full of douche energy.
I negotiate $1 million deals for breakfast.
These guys want something. You know, I use a pen, you use a gun. What's the difference? Am I right? And the fact that he's a douche plays into the movie. Because he could have, if he weren't so stupid and unaware, and he didn't want all the credit. He could have told the truth that John McClane is actually Holly's husband. It could have gone very different, but he wanted the credit, so he had to lie and pretend that he was John McClane's best friend. And like the look he had.
But I don't think he was doing that to protect Holly. I think he was doing that
for credit. No, I'm saying it's for his own credit. No, right. I'm not saying he didn't really cared about her. He wanted to be the guy that made the deal. He wanted to say, look at me, I'm a big dick boy. Look at what I did. That's why he does. No, I don't think he did it for Holly at all. No, I'm saying, it wasn't altruism. It was actually the opposite. It was self-interest. But it works because if he had like spilled the beans, the situation would have played out differently. And that's where you see in this movie, like things could have tweaked slightly different either way, a number of different times, and it would have played out very differently. You just see that being like hangs on the edge of the knife.
There's like a great detail. I don't remember if it's in that scene or a later scene where, because at some point, maybe John puts the picture frame with him and Holly face down, and Holly looks over at it, and Hans like clocks it that she looked at that. He doesn't quite go investigate yet, but he clocks that she looked at that picture frame, and the camera kind of pans over, and then it's left, and then later on when Hans is down there, he flips the thing and realizes
after he sees the news article. Right.
Right. Yeah.
From another, the guy who's Walter Peck in Ghostbusters is just another great shitbird character, the reporter. Grows in a lot of scenes, but he's just a first rate douche. But the look Ellis gives when he's like, he tries to get John to give himself up, and he just gives this pathetic shrug. Whoop, gave the old college try. And then he drinks his stupid fucking Coke and gets his head blown off. I just love it. He's just like, lurches over, and I don't know if he realized. I can't even tell if he knows he's about to get killed or not. I don't know, but he just reaches in and drinks his Coke, and then we hear the gunshot and it cuts away, and it's just a perfect little side character. He's not huge, doesn't have a ton of scenes, but they work really well. And so one of the the comic relief is Dwayne T. Robinson. I mean, he is just first rate stupid. And I see, I don't watch this movie every year like you, Eric. I could, but nobody else in my family likes this movie. I made my wife watch it once and she got really pissed that she just really doesn't care about most action movies. The thing I like is there's enough of a gap. I always forget about the line. He's showing up, right? with cops there. We get the body falls on the cop car and he's just, had all this crazy experience. And the LAPD shows up. And he's telling him everything that John McClane's told him. He's like, IDs, could be a bartender. But then the line is like, he's like, what about the body that fell on my car? He's like, I don't know. Maybe some stockbroker got depressed. That line, it's not one of the iconic lines in this movie, but it makes me laugh every time I watch this movie. I forget about it. And then I just, it's so dismissive and stupid and just aggressively dumb. Like,
see, that is my least favorite part of this movie is that guy and all the interactions with that guy. It is so unnecessary. It actually takes me out a little bit of the movie.
Oh,
because it's like it's unserious. Like he's just an unserious character.
No, he isn't. He's definitely not a serious character, but it works. It cuts up away the tension for me. I bust a gut because of the things he says. So don't IDs. You could be a bartender. And then he gets told off. I don't know. I like it. The humor works for me. He's just such another one of those actors that plays a lot of jerks. I mean, he's the principal in Breakfast Club. I think he's in some other stuff too. Just one of these obnoxious, wrong characters. It makes me laugh. I was like, I always forget that he's just like, he thinks that this was a stockbroker that killed himself on Christmas Eve. He's like, doesn't consider the I think it's great. I like the character and I think it works in the context of the movie for me. It's a little break in the action. We get the further character development because it pauses and he gets to talk to Carl Winslow. And what I love is too, John McClane and Carl Winslow, it's this moral support that John needs. Even though he's doing all this stuff, you can see it's wearing on him. It's tough. It'd be stressful and draining.
He needs
a
friend.
And he gets this pep talk. Yeah, he gives me a friend. He gets the pep talk, and it's really, really important. And you see that.
The whole scene where he's like, what, you got flat feet? He's like, what? Like, he's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, why are you a desk job? You're not a beat cop. And he tells him this whole story. You can tell John is like super sympathetic. Yeah. And they're just like really connecting as like cops. It's just great stuff for sure.
And it works at the end. They get a big moment at the end where they just like see each other and they smile and give a big hug. And it's Mm-hmm. It's awesome, and it works, and it earns that moment with all those little things.
And he gets ability to murder again.
Yeah, he got his gun off for sure.
Sure. Well, this time he didn't have any problem. He shot like 5 rounds into that dude. He just like almost emptied the clip. I've always never been able to buy that guy survived. That's always bothered me. Like,
yeah.
Was he the one that was hung?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I'm like, that guy being alive, that's too much of a like silly last scare horror trope. Like, okay, I get that we need it so that we can see him last bit of care. Like, his character growth.
It's very Michael Myers-esque. Yeah.
It's like, there's just no way. Like, the guy, we literally, the last time we saw him, he was dangling there with the chain around his neck. Like, so did he fall?
Well, also, it does, the other thing doesn't make any sense. So he was, John fought him on the way to the roof, right? There's like a staircase that leads up to the roof. And that's where he hangs him on the chains, and he slides in there. So he's like literally above the staircase that leads to the roof. Then all the people that were up there, he brings them back down, but they still blow the roof, right? Hans still blows the roof at some point. Yeah. How is he? He's up there. This guy is like hanging there, dead, with chains around his neck, where the explosion happens. How does he survive that? Well, I know when they bring him down, he's like covered in like, you know, soot or whatever. It seems like he was part of the, you know, near the explosion, but
yeah, maybe boy. It jarred him loose, but it doesn't make sense. It was always like, this moment doesn't.
Well, they do redo that in With a Vengeance with the like, basically, I don't know if the guy's supposed to be related to this guy, but the other big, tall German guy in With a Vengeance, same thing happens where he comes back to life and John has to kill him at the end.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, it's a whatever. It's not a deal breaker or anything, but I was like, okay, there's no way. And I always had trouble believing John would win in that fight. I mean, he just looks so exhausted, and the guy's bigger and not as beat up. I mean, his feet are mangled to hell because he's been stepping on glass. So it's like, I don't even know how he could really put any pressure on his feet after they've been just shredded. It's like, but whatever. I mean, by that point, the movie is more than earned to dabble in a little bit of action movie silliness towards the end. Like, it's totally fine at that point. But I mean, I love the scene where the guy eats the chocolate. That was one that like resonated with me as a kid, and I still love. Like, he's sitting there getting ready for the cops to break in, and they're by the like commissary or whatever it is. And he reaches in and he eats a Crunch bar, and then he's eating a Mars bar.
That guy was a henchman in like
a lot of
every action movie that came.
Yeah, he had a good run in the '80s and early '90s. Yeah. But yeah, he was just. We need some guy with a mullet who looks vaguely ominous. But I mean,
We haven't talked much about Rickman, and I think he's really what makes like the great English actor as a bad guy is like never goes wrong. I don't know why they don't do that more. You get some Shakespearean actor to play a bad guy in an action movie. It's always great. That's why Jeremy Irons is so good in the third one. I mean, Rickman is a fucking revelation in this movie.
Oh, of course.
I think like you almost want him to get away with the crime because he's so charming. And the scene where McClane finds him and he's like, "Oh, don't shoot me. Don't shoot me."
You're one of them.
The American accent.
No.
Yeah. It's so funny. The voice he does, but oh God, I love that scene so much.
Bill
Clay. Yeah. I love that because you can see in his eyes the horror, and then he realizes it's all on his face what that he can pull it off.
No, it's that, you know, that scene is perfectly acted because you see a quick micro expression, right? Like, he's actually afraid because he realizes it's John McClane, and then he steers into the fear for his character, and it's just more of a chess match. It's just great.
John, too, is not sure. He's not 100% sure who this guy is because he doesn't tell him. He's like, I got invited to the party on accident. He doesn't tell him why he's actually there.
Oh, no, there's a whole chest match happening.
Well, yeah, he doesn't even give him a loaded gun.
Right, yeah. That's a test. It was definitely a test. Like, all right, I'm going to see if this is the guy he says he is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I think the acting of it, too, is just the way Rickman kind of pulls it off. He's just so good. And I mean, I don't remember ever thinking this, there was like a surprise, you know, because like they do kind of play it where they start out as terrorists, where he's like, I want the release of all of these people, and they're like, And he does tell Takagi he's not we're not terrorists. So it's always kind of like they're there to steal the money. But I know it is sort of like a twist in the movie where they're not actually there as terrorists. They're really there to steal the money. And the whole idea was just to get into that vault. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah,
but I think it works. It definitely works.
It's not supposed to be a twist, really. I don't view it as a twist. I mean, some characters realize it at a different time. Holly realizes at the end that, all this for just money. He's like, I'm not a poor thief either. I'm a very good thief or whatever.
They do the same thing in with the Vengeance, where it's like, who is this Simon Says guy? Is he just there to terrorize the city? And it's like, no, he's just like his brother. This is all about money. It's all about a misdirect to rob Fort Knox. Like,
well, sure,
it's
sure, but
sort of the. Yeah, you're right. It's not hidden in this movie in the way
really,
that I
no, because they say it's a joke. Even when he's like saying these are our demands, like I read about it in Time. Like, it's very clear that they're not really terrorists pretty early on. I mean, I guess it's tough. I've seen this movie a bazillion times, so I don't.
It's not until he kills Takagi where you really like, yeah, this is
you
just
know what
about
their motivation is.
Yeah.
But no, it wouldn't work with a lesser performance from that. I mean, it would work. It'd still be a very good movie, but it's great because of Alan Rickman. It's the acting, it's the subtle nuances, and it's the way he leads his brigade, too. He's got all these little problems that he has to manage. Because if he doesn't keep everything together and be really, really smart, things play out not as well for them either. He's got to, like, the guy's brother who dies, he's got to manage that guy's anger and rage. He's got to, like, think logically about what they need to do. And the guy gets mad and they ignore Hans early on. And that causes more problems for the terrorists. They're like, hey, he's hemmed in. Leave him in there. Let him be hemmed in. We know where he is. He can't do anything. But then they keep pursuing him, and then he gets out, and he's able to get the detonators because he's not hemmed in. I don't want neutral. I want dead, you know? So it's just great, and it's subtle.
Well, then when they get the detonators, and the guy's pissed because he didn't get revenge on his brother, and he's smashing the thing, and Holly's like, only John could drive somebody that crazy. I love that part.
Oh, yeah. And just, like, so, he's a funny villain. I must have missed 60 minutes, you know, just...
What was the plan to get away? I've always wondered that. Was it the ambulance? Was
yeah.
that
yeah.
the explosion, and then they get out in the ambulance?
The explosion would confuse everybody because then they wouldn't know who was in the explosion or not. And
so they would,
there would just
would
be
kill
a bunch
all
of dead
the,
bodies. Yes.
Right. Kill all the people at the party. And
they'll have to sort through the rubble. And by the time... they figure out they weren't in the explosion.
They'll be gone.
I mean, wouldn't the police be like, why is there an ambulance in the parking garage? Wouldn't that raise questions?
I mean, maybe. I assume, I don't know, that they'd wait for a bunch of other ambulances to arrive and they just look like a normal one. But I don't know. Yeah, I don't know that they have no idea. Like in the perfect version, how this would play out, I don't know. But I was
it's like the Joker with the school bus thing, where he's like, "How did the Joker know there was going to be a bunch of school buses by the bank? Like, how did he know that?"
Well, the Joker in The Dark Knight relies on everybody following plans to a T, and then he exploits them. But anyway, yeah, it's a bit silly when he pulls out as a bus and just joins the throng of buses, and nobody's like, "Why is that bus turning in?"
From inside the building?
Yes. Like nobody, nobody's like, what the fuck? I just saw this bus turn in. Like nobody has any reaction to that.
And the guy driving it is dressed like a clown.
Right. And they just like let him in. Like, yeah, I guess that guy got lost. Whatever. I've been there. Like, yeah, I don't know. It was the ambulance. We almost see the one guy get away.
Argyle. Fucking Argyle stops him, right?
Yeah, he does. He gets his little arc. He just spent most of the movie just getting drunk, listening to music in the limo.
Talking to his girl.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and then a lot of the douches get their come. I mean, I know you said you don't like the deputy chief, but like he tries to send the guys in, the cops, and they get smoked. And he's talking to John McClane, he's trying to talk John McClane down, and he's just annoyed about John McClane's, you know, collateral damage, I guess. He's like, I'm not the one that got butt fucked on national TV. I mean, I had to pause and just let the laugh play out because it was great. I don't know. And I love those scenes. They work for me. The characters that don't work so well are the FBI guys. Those guys I'm a little iffy on, I suppose.
Yeah.
If I'm picking nits, they bother me a lot more. I'm there.
The two Johnsons or whatever?
Yes. Yeah.
The Fratelli guy is one of them.
Yes, yes. One of the Fratellis, yes. That's right. And then I don't know the other guy.
Yeah, and he's like, just like fucking Saigon. And the
guy's I was in junior high, you dickhead.
Yeah, like what is going on here? These guys are FBI agents and they're just flying around in this attack helicopter. Like, what the fuck? Yeah. That's a choice. It's a choice.
They show up 2/3 of the way in the movie. They take over. They're like, apparently don't care about some hostages dying. And then they're like, they think they're way too clever than they are. They're like, ooh, you guys feel more like a plot convention than actual characters. I mean, it's, again, not a deal breaker or anything, but I'm always a bit like, okay. And then they throw in the line, no, this is Agent Johnson. No, the other one. Like, okay. We're going to steer into Johnson jokes. But yeah, that's where I get a little bit, okay. But it does set up the scene where, like, again, Don McLean has to do all this crazy stuff. Like, he's trying to get everybody off the roof to save their lives, and he's got to fire the machine gun so he looks like a fucking terrorist. It's just crazy. And then he has to jump off from the fucking with the fire hose.
That's like, that would
literally be the worst nightmare for me to have to wrap a fire hose around my waist and jump off a building.
Would you just roll with your explosion?
I don't know what I would do. Honestly, I would just, I don't know, curl up in a ball
and then just get killed in the explosion. Sure. I mean, I might do the same. I don't like heights either. Yeah, I mean, he's like, please don't let me die. I'll never go on top of another building again. No, that's just all these little touches, right? Like he's trying to get in the window and he shoots the glass to bust through. And then
just in time for the hose to fall off the roof.
Right, but then it starts to cream down. He's got to worry about getting pulled down the metal wheel that the hose is attached to, and he's got to get it off. Just these little touches. And that exchange with Hans Gruber and John, I mean, this is movie that we're just gushing, but it's like he sees that John McClane doesn't have any shoes on, and then later on, shoot the glass. And it's the chess match. It just goes on and on and on. And
that scene too, it's the same thing in The Predator, where it's just like dudes just shooting guns at stuff. Like, that's another, like, McTiernan thing, which you'll never see that in movies anymore. But it's like, guys just, like, unloading clips on shit. It's just, like, for some reason, it's so cool. I don't know. I mean, I'm not, like, a gun guy, but in action movies, just watching dudes just shoot stuff is just cool. I don't know. Maybe that's my lizard brain or something. It's just like, yeah.
When it's well done, sure. In a movie that's, you know, well-constructed and you care about what's happening, yeah. A lot of movies with gun stuff, I mean, it's just boring and doesn't look exciting. You don't care, but this is something else. It's great. And he's got to run off to live. He's got to walk on glass to survive. He's got to do all this crazy stuff. It's just super well constructed. And then,
so yeah, Kevin, does it hold up for you? I know you hadn't seen it for a while.
I hadn't seen it in maybe 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I was surprised how much I remembered of the movie. Like, all the iconic lines, the plots, Alan Rickman. It was all still up there. So it sticks with you. And it definitely holds up. I mean, every moment I lamented at how bad movies are now.
Yeah.
I mean, this just holds up, and every piece in the puzzle just holds together. There's not much fat to this movie.
It's funny. I was watching a little bit. One of my kids walked in, and she was like, "Who? That guy seems so familiar." And I was just trying to make her guess. I was like, "I think Harry Potter." And she was like, "Is that Professor Snape?" I'm like, "Yep, that's him."
Oh, nice.
This is funny that, like, you know, different generations, you know, to her, that's who he is. And to me, like, that dude's Hans Gruber, you know?
Yeah.
Sure. And I,
the late Alan Rickman,
sure.
Yeah. You know, recently departed.
Rest in peace.
It's always shocking. It's not shocking, but still, I get a jolt every time I look at a movie that like has airports in the 80s and 90s. It was like, oh yeah, so he's got a gun on the plane.
He smokes a cigarette he gets off the plane. Yeah,
just people waltz in and out without any issue. It's like, oh gosh.
Yeah, where you'd greet people as they got off the plane, you know?
Right.
Yeah, I remember those days.
It's like, it was like, oh my goodness, that's crazy. That's how it used to be. Like you mentioned Home Alone, like how they're, that's one we do watch every year. And when they're running with the run Rudolph plank trying to catch their plane, like, oh yeah, that would not be feasible anymore. You would be screwed.
Yeah, they didn't even have to go through security. You know, right. they're just
sprinting, getting right to the
gate. Just late to the airport, yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. Yeah. It's like, oh, boy.
Do you guys have a favorite of Hans Gruber's crew, of his crew members? I know you mentioned the fake Huey Lewis, that he's a top five crew member.
I don't have a definitive ranking.
I am very impressed by the hacker.
Yeah, he's great. He's
super fun. Magic throws it through there. Boom!
To Kareem, yeah. Kareem back to Magic. And the crowd goes wild.
The quarterback is Lewis toast.
Just smokes a guy.
I love the after Hans kills Takagi and he's like, you can crack the safe. He's like, you didn't bring me here for my winning personality, did you?
That's right.
Yeah. I like the guy that John kills first, just because he has like such weird shit in his bag, is like he's got like a lighter and gum. It's just, and John's just like going through his shit. I like that guy's cool. He gets his neck snapped while they roll down the stairs. That he's the brother, right? He's the one that
he's the first one killed. Right. Yeah,
the tiny feet guy.
Right, but that's the main guy's.
He's the guy that wears the sweater that says,
"Yeah,
now I have a machine gun." Ho ho ho! In that order.
Right. In that order, get it right, or some guy at. Where was I at? The Dubliner or something like that. Yeah, I think I was at the Dubliner.
And he got it wrong.
Yeah.
Didn't stop him from being super confident, Eric.
I don't really have, it's a perfect movie, 5 stars. I don't have any bad things other than what we've said about it. I watch it all the time. We'll watch it forever. I can't imagine getting sick of it. Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot else to say. It's a great movie. If you haven't seen it, go check it out.
Yeah,
I was just going to say that the one scene that always catches me off guard is when Hans dies. Like it's surprisingly like it looks so good, but I always forget the part where like Hans, there's a second there where Hans thinks he's going to kill John. Cause he has the gun and slow motions brings the gun up, but then he slips and then the like fear on his face is like, oh shit, I'm going to fall. I just love the way the visuals of it. Cause it's like, Hans is like, oh shit, here I come with the gun. And then, oh no. And then he's falling. Just love it. Sorry. I think, and it just looks cool. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. The slow-mo falling, and it looks like a practical effect where some guy actually did fall off a building that was,
yeah,
looked really good. 5 stars for me, if I didn't say it already. Yep. It's nearly perfect.
Yeah. I'd say this is a perfect movie. Probably the best action movie of the 20th century and maybe even the 21st. It's immaculate. It's great. Yeah, they don't really make action movies this good anymore. Or very rarely they do, at least. It's excellent.
I think I do like Predator more than this movie, if I had to pick between the two of them.
Wow. But
they're both great.
Predator has more action.
Yeah, I mean, it has like the whole monster piece of it. I just think it's, and you know, it's obviously like a fake ass movie about an alien, you know, whereas this is more grounded in the real world. But I think that's just a genre of sci-fi fantasy action that I like more than just a straight. I mean, I like heist movies, and this is a great action heist movie. It's, I mean, like I said, it's, we're splitting hairs for me between the two of them.
Sure, I mean, that's fine. It's tough. I mean, it's great. It holds up. It's aged immaculately. It's awesome. No big shock. So, yeah.
Why does it hold up so well? Why doesn't it age?
It's a good question.
Well, the writing being so good helps the mostly practical. I mean, it's pretty much all practical effects. Some of the explosions, a couple of them don't look amazing, but they still look better than CGI. It's mostly stunt work. It's just filled with incredible, like, timeless characters, and it's both of its time and it transcends its time. I mean, it feels like the 80s. I'm very well aware when I watch the movie that it's the late 80s. It feels like it, but. It's just so compelling. I don't know. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a bummer about Bruce Willis, sort of his health issues that he's having now that sounds like he won't make movies ever again. And he, you know, he's like an all-time hero to me, like as an actor, just from this to Pulp Fiction. Like, I mean, you just go down the list. Like, the fact that that guy was the biggest movie star in the world is so weird. But he's great. You know, he's like, he never was even nominated for an Oscar, right? I mean, I can't think of, was 12 Monkeys, was he nominated maybe?
I don't know. It was like a serious role. I mean, like, quote unquote serious. You know, he's not, most of the movies he's in aren't the kind of movies that get serious.
Well, Sixth Sense, he was great in Sixth Sense.
Did he get nominated for that? Yeah, that's close. That's a borderline one. That's the kind of movie where you might get nominated.
Did he get nominated for a Grammy is my question. You guys remember Bruno?
No.
Oh.
That was his music persona.
Yeah.
I know that happened. I was not aware of anything culturally at the time, so I have no idea. I think I vaguely remember hearing about it.
Not bad stuff.
Yeah, he weirdly didn't do a lot of just like straight dramas. That's true. That is odd.
Yeah, he's never been nominated.
He had the chops.
Yeah, he sure did.
But I mean, I think comedies he did. He did a lot of action movies. Sixth Sense is the movie off the top of my head that would be closest that would get consideration, but he didn't.
Wasn't he in? He was in one movie that was like a really big bomb, right?
Hudson Hawk.
Was it? Well, Hudson Hawk was a big bomb for sure, but like early on in his career,
Bonfire of the Vanities.
Yes, that's the movie I'm thinking of. I've never seen that, but
I haven't seen it either.
That my understanding is that was like a pretty big bomb, and that maybe changed the kind of movies he decided to do.
Oh, because that was like semi-serious. Like,
Die Hard worked. I'll just do Die Hard type movies, you know?
Right.
He did have earlier, like, have you ever seen Death Becomes Her?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where it's almost comedic. That's one where you see there was at least some range there. I don't know how much he exercised, but that one he's playing almost like a doofus. Like, he's not an actor. He's just kind of a dork in that movie.
Well, he was in the like whole Nine Yards movies.
Yeah, sure.
But he wasn't like, they're comedic, but he was like the straight man.
Right. He's almost never the goofy guy. The goofiest I can think of is Death Becomes Her, where he's kind of goofy.
Wasn't he in a date movie? He plays like a schlub. Oh, sorry.
Maybe. No, you could be right. I mean, I know, but I think, like, okay, he did Tears of the Kingdom and, like, yeah. He's in Pulp Fiction.
Fifth Element's a great movie. Yeah, I love sure, that
but,
movie.
Yeah, but sci-fi. But yeah, sci-fi movies don't hardly ever get consideration, at least they haven't for right. most of. I mean, it's just that's a movie. You do.
He's actually
an Oscar.
He's actually kind of weird in the Fifth Element. Like his character, he's not this like. He's kind of like a. Well, he's sort of like a. I just got fired from my job and everything sucks. Boy Scout, he like wakes up hungover and he's like a. Shit, and even in the third Die Hard movie, he's like, he wakes up hungover. The movie starts. He's like, I got a bad fucking hangover. I'm on suspension. Like, he's always sort of playing as like kind of down on his luck guy
and a blue collar. He's always
blue collar for sure. Yeah,
like he's a cab driver in Fifth Element, right? Like,
yeah.
Well, I got to watch that movie again.
Yeah, it's been a while. But yeah, I mean, it's tough for me, man. When I think of any of his roles, I just don't think, yeah, okay, you're going to get a category for stuff. Yeah,
Unbreakable, he's very, like, very stoic in that movie. Right, very low-key.
Right. And I like Unbreakable, but I wouldn't be like, he should be nominated for an Oscar. Like,
no.
He's fine. It's good, but it's, you know, it's not.
I'm seeing here on Wikipedia, he spoke with a stutter when he was a kid. Struggled with a stutter. But so I've never seen any episode of Moonlighting. Kevin, you'd mentioned that at the outset.
Right.
Never seen a second of it.
Yeah, it's not streaming anywhere for that I know of. So that hurts it. It's an amazing show. A Sybil Shepherd. She's amazing in it. Super funny show. Super cool. David Addison. I highly recommend it.
Recommend it.
Yeah.
All right. So interesting. After Die Hard, he followed that up with doing the voice of a talking baby, and look who's talking.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
What an odd choice.
That's a 90s concept.
That was a big hit, though.
It was. They made three of those. They made a sequel with not Rosie O'Donnell, Roseanne Barr. Did they? Yeah, that's Look Who's Talking Too. Yep.
Yeah.
And Look Who's Talking Now,
which was Dogs, I think.
Yeah.
Wait, wasn't John Travolta in Look Who's Talking?
Yeah, at least the first two. I don't know if he was in the third.
Kirstie Alley, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, yeah. So they had worked together in that, too, and then in Pulp Fiction. I guess I never made that connection.
Yeah, they probably weren't ever together actually during production, though.
No, I'm sure the part of the pitch was like, hey, Bruce, we'll pay you a bunch of money. You're just going to come in. You can wear whatever and just record these lines. Just record a bunch of lines over the course of a week or whatever.
Yeah.
And here's your $3 million. Okay.
And you just have to be David Addison again.
Well, then
David Addison from Moonlighting and Die Hard as well. If you like that persona, you'll like Moonlighting.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah, Bruce Willis, great. I mean, he's like, you know, littered in my childhood from every movie that I saw from, you know, 1989 to from whenever he stopped making movies. So, a weird guy. He's not like a balding man, you know, lost his hair in his, you know, middle age.
Yeah. Sure.
Not an especially like buff guy for an action hero. Just kind of he's a weird amalgamation of actor. There's not a lot.
He's kind of an everyman, blue collar schmo. Yeah.
You would never see a guy like that show up in like a Marvel movie, you know?
Like, no, not as like a lead. You might see him as a bit for a second. Like, that's it. You're not gonna base a movie around a guy like that.
He'd make a great Ant-Man.
Think so?
Bruce Willis, a young Bruce Willis would have been a good Ant-Man for sure.
Maybe. He seems a little too tough, but I don't know. Maybe I've got Paul Rudd's less macho portrayal of Ant-Man.
I mean, couldn't be worse than Paul Rudd. That's an upgrade, if you ask me.
Yeah. All right. Well, as we've been talking here, I actually have the movie we're going to watch next week. I've actually been down to two choices, and I've been like teetering between the two and struggling, but I think I've landed on one. So we're ready to figure out what we're going to watch for next week.
Oh, wow. It came down to the wire.
It did. I was just wrestling, and I just changing my mind. I just keep going back and forth. But let me give you the year. One of the great movie years, 1999. A lot of choices.
1999?
Yes.
I have a book about that movie.
Oh, really?
Really great book. Yeah, you should check it out. It's called Best Movie Year Ever. It's actually right here. I can see it right next to me. You guys should check that book out. It's a good book.
Oh, okay. Did you acquire that yourself? You just decide, hey, I like reading about movies? And
yeah, I bought it. It spent my own money on it. And I have it. Ownership. Its possession is...
Wow, I didn't know a book needed an origin story like that.
I'm just curious. You know, Eric prefers to typically listen to his books, and so it's just kind of surprising.
Okay.
Well, you mean this thing I have to actually like flip through it, and the book doesn't read itself to me?
No, you have to drag your eyes across the symbols and, you know, decipher their meaning in your own
brain.
That
doesn't sound right. Okay, so 1999.
Let me give you the director here. This will be fun. I think this will give it away.
M. Night Shyamalan?
No, it's not M. Night Shyamalan. It's a director named Kinka Usher. Does that help you? So are you a big fan of Kinka's work? And I was trying to think. So Kinka was a commercial director. Usher helped, not Usher the musician, Usher being the last name of Kinka Usher, came up with the Got Milk campaign in the 90s. You remember Got Milk?
I do. Yeah.
And how about the Taco Bell Chihuahua? You remember that talking Chihuahua that advertised Taco Bell?
Yeah.
This is the director of the movie, the person who created those campaigns.
You should do a campaign for lab-grown meat.
Sure.
Is Armie Hammer in this movie?
No Armie Hammer. So we don't have that obvious tie-in and callback. But here's what commercial director Kinka Usher had to say when he was given the script. He said, "I thought it was boring. However, the premise was great. Most of the movies made by commercial directors are heavy on visuals and thin on content. I don't want to be part of that. I was very cognizant of showing that I know how to work with character," is what he said. Even the slightest clue at this point.
Character. So it's character driven.
Yeah. That's fair to say. Yes.
No, I really have no idea.
All right. Let's try and we'll at least narrow down some of the possibilities. So it's based off of a concept it's adapted from characters from Flaming Carrot comics. Does that help you? Are you big Flaming Carrot comics readers?
Is this Mystery Men?
It is, yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, it is.
Mystery Men?
I love that movie.
Okay. Eric, have you not ever heard? So it's a comedy superhero movie from 1999. Let's give you some of the cast. That's where we're going to go next. So it's Ben Stiller, Hank Azaria, William H. Macy, Paul Rubens, Janine Garofalo, bunch of other people you recognize that will have bit roles in it.
Never seen it.
Okay.
Never seen it. This is like a big, it was like an MTV kind of
a little bit.
Movie, right? Tom Waits is in it.
Yeah.
This is a movie that I watch on a regular basis. Maybe every few years I watch it.
Mystery Man. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Ben Stiller is awesome in it.
I like this. This movie I liked at the time. It tanked horribly at the box office.
It was ahead of its time. It was before comic book movies were a thing.
Right. The timing wasn't probably great. And it's a movie now.
Is it a comedy?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a superhero comedy. It's a movie now that we're...
But it has amazing stars. Who's the lead bad guy?
Jeffrey Rush.
Jeffrey Rush, yeah.
You get a nice British villain, Eric.
At least. There you go. It always works. Yeah.
But it's a movie I loved, haven't seen since, and now that we're... Well, I think we're still in it, but it's not the death knell even. I think we're going to be in the superhero era for a lot longer. But now that we're in a certain dead zone of the superhero era. I'm looking forward to watching it, knowing what came after this movie, knowing that it was before X-Men, before the Spider-Man, right before we really started to get ramp up the superhero stuff. Really curious to watch it. Think of a less cynical and less miserable The Boys almost. It's not that dark and awful and miserable, but there's some elements of that that you'll see.
And there's a million gags. Every time I watch it, I pick up a new gag that I missed. It's great.
So, all right, I'm excited. Well, I had another comedy that was going to be older, weirder. I want to revisit it. I might pick it next time, but I'll save it in my back pocket. I was worried Eric would hate it, and I think it was a better chance that Eric would like Mystery Men. And you already said you love it, Kevin, so that's good.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'll love it. I think I'll probably like it a lot, but Mystery Men. So
exciting.
All right.
Is it streaming anywhere that you know of, or?
I was looking. I think you're going to have to pay for it. I couldn't tell if it was free on Amazon or not. So this was a last minute pivot for me. So I was looking at the other movie and then.
Okay, no, it's fine. Just for the listeners, the people listening.
Not that I know of. It's a movie I just selfishly want to talk about it, using my power to force you two to watch it. Twist Kevin's arm, especially.
Well, us and then the thousands of people that tune in.
Listen to this, and they watch every movie that we watch. We have tons. We have just legions of people who just
watch. So they know that's what the next episode will be, so they got to get prepared. So they're tuning in.
Yeah, I mean, we should get a cut out of all the rentals and sales. Yeah.
That and the human-grown meat, too. We should
get a ton of money from them. Are you kidding? Oh, what? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't just sell out for nothing.
No.
Lab-grown meat. This episode.
Happy trails, Hans.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Boop.